people believe everything is going to remain the same, that's probably closing your eyes to what's happening in the world.
Welcome back to Stay Cognizant, where we bring you the ideas and leaders shaping what's new and what's next in tech and in work. Today, I'm joined by my colleague, Ganesh Iyer. He's the president of Intuitive Operations and Automation and the Industry Solutions Group here at Cognizant. He's in the room with enterprises as they re-architect operations, workflows, and careers in the age of AI. And Ganesh is also passionate about empowering workers in the future to leverage AI to its best capabilities and to improve their skills as well. One of the things we're going to talk about together this morning is Cognizant's New Work, New World research report. It just came out. It was a special report for our presence at Davos. And it shows that AI is already influencing 93% of jobs and could handle almost $5 trillion of U.S. work tasks. But there's a deeper truth. Context, human, organizational, and industry, any type of context that enterprises create is what unlocks real value. Our CEO, Ravi Kumar S., reminded leaders at Davos that job cuts are the easiest, but probably the most flawed response to AI and its possibilities. The winning move is to treat skilling as a core infrastructure and embed continuous learning into the operating fabric of the enterprise. So today we're going to talk about moving from fear to agency, how to build a career GPS, as Ganesh calls it, for every team member, embed learning and development into the architecture of work, and design cultures where unsettled is the new settled. So welcome, Ganesh. I am extremely excited to have you here.
Absolute delight to be having this conversation with you, Rupam. Looking forward to it.
Great. So we hear a lot about what AI can do, but inside organizations, the bigger question is often how people are processing what the shift to what a more enabled AI-enabled enterprise means for their roles, skills, and futures. And Ganesh, I want to dive right into the research that I just mentioned, you know, shows that AI is already touching the vast majority of jobs, right? And it's not just, you know, lower-level jobs or entry-level jobs. It's actually, you know, really impacting jobs sort of at the top. What do you think the most flawed assumption is in terms of what those leaders are thinking today about the way that AI is going to impact the future of their organizations?
So, you know, this is my perspective. The world of technology is such that the imagination latches on pretty quickly. Active marketing machinery takes over. Mm-hmm. And then you amplify how it is going to impact. Then when that doesn't happen in the enterprise world, it lulls some people into believing nothing is going to happen. And what happens is then it starts catching up and you see widespread implementation of any technology, whether you go back to the world of PCs, mobile phones, internet. This is the scenario. And AI is no different. And I genuinely believe that the rate of innovation, which is anchored on AI, is so huge. Mm. We are yet to see. I mean, it's not over yet. We can't say this is it. We are going to see greater innovation. We are going to see different kind of agentification. So the world is going to be very, very different. In fact, I will go on to say, from my perspective, I may be the last generation, or people who are people managers will be the last generation who are just managing pure people. Going forward, all of us will be managing people and AI agents. So it is for anybody to believe that nothing is going to happen. If somebody says everything is going to collapse, I think it's an overestimation of AI. If people believe everything is going to remain the same, that's probably closing your eyes to what's happening in the world.
So let's go back to what you just said a couple of seconds ago about, you know, you're the last generation managing only human workforce. If that's true, and, you know, we're moving to a place where workforces are going to be, you know, much more heterogeneous between, you know, digital labor pools, as Robbie calls them, and human labor pools, what's the first operating model change you think companies need to make to prepare for this reality?
I think we as people have to learn that we need to be at a level where we can provide governance to agents. We can also provide learning to agents, because agents need to learn as well. They need to be managed just like humans to some extent, different type of management. The ability to do that and ability to elevate your own knowledge level, not just about the domain that you are operating in, but also about how it is going to kind of intermingle with AI agents, would be a great asset for any one of us to have.
Within that, are there, I know you talked about governance, are there certain types of decisions where human responsibility can't be delegated, at least not in the future that you can see right now?
See, we all, including enterprises, they don't. The change doesn't happen in a binary fashion. Mm-hmm. It happens in a fashion of analogous fashion. Think about it. Autonomous car capability has existed for at least last 3 years. How many countries, how many cities have allowed autonomous cars to be running in their street around the world? So at best, I mean, there are some good exceptions, but at best, people are saying it has to be autonomous ability, but with human assisted. Mm-hmm. So this is the process of change with which, you know, human beings, societies, countries, business enterprises go through. Nobody is going to jump from 100% human to 100% autonomous tomorrow. And when you talk about auditability, transparency, all those aspects, human in the loop would be the first implementation. And how many humans will be a point of discussion, but I don't believe enterprises are going to completely switch to autonomous process overnight. Right. In chosen areas which are less risky, in fact, I will encourage them to explore autonomous process. But there are, as you go into complex areas where governance is required, maker checker is required, control is required, then human will be there in the loop.
So everything we're talking about and the humans who are in the loop, you know, obviously requires people to gain new skills, you know, to overcome some fear. You know, we're going to talk about fear in a little bit, because I know you have a perspective about fear. But I want to start with this, you know, you've talked about a career GPS, you know, really having the ability to kind of navigate your career and the skills and learning and growth that you need to continue to add to really be a positive force in this future that you're talking about. Paint a picture of what you mean. What's the MVP of this career GPS? What does it look like, you know, for me? What does it look like for you? Paint a picture of that for us.
So, you know, I've been in the industry for about 40 years. I'll complete 40 years in July of this year. And I grew up, at every stage I was told, the company assists you with career planning, but you own career. The company does not own your career. Every individual has to own their career. If we start with that as a premise, and then we put the second point that everybody loves to do a good job. Everybody has ambition to grow. Everybody wants to be seen as a winner. They want to be stretched. They want to be recognized. And they want to be economically rewarded. So if you take these principles, organization's role is to give them a path, an option to progress. So career GPS is not the thought process which we have. Currently, we do have it in play intuitive operations and automation. It basically says where you are, just like normal GPS. Then you say, this is where I want to go, just like normal GPS. And then it probably gives you a path. And in that path, it talks about competencies that you have to develop, learning and development programs which are available within. You could also explore such programs outside. And as a result, you as a member who believes that I own my own career has a pathway in front of you, and it gives you a choice. And I think that's a fabulous way to overcome fear, because fear is caused by change. And most of us as human beings are not wired to immediately embrace change.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, the ignorance of what is happening, or the fact that, oh, I don't know this, results in fear, and that fear can be overcome by various factors. And fear is not necessarily a negative emotion, in my view. How you deal with the fear will get to decide whether it is a negative emotion or a positive emotion. Because I have experienced fear many times, and I continue to experience fear. So if you take that as an example, knowledge, ability to visualize the future, and a supportive environment are three elements which allow people to channel their fear towards action, resulting in they succeeding.
Tell us about something that gave you fear, and maybe something that was pre-AI, and maybe something that's been more recent as this AI shift has been accelerating.
So, I mean, I will probably give a slightly different spin. Fear of when I got my first senior level job as the president of Hewlett Packard India. I was working in Singapore. HP moved me to India. I was 38 years old, and my predecessor had done a fabulous job. He was with HP for, I think, 10 over years, 55 years old. And, you know, the respect for elders is very deeply ingrained in Indian ethos.
Mm-hmm.
And here is a young punk walking in, first time getting into a senior role. The day announcement happened, the media was around, and they wanted to get my perspective. I had not experienced that before. And genuinely, fear gripped me. Will I succeed? And I started thinking through as to what should I do. And one of the things which helped me a lot is I remained myself.
Mm.
I wasn't pretending to be my predecessor. I wasn't trying to copy him, because I would have felt extremely uncomfortable trying to copy him. I mean, I wouldn't be in my skin then. So I chose my way. I spent a lot of time externally. I had come from sales background. So I got to meet lots of people, and that helped me learn so much about India's market and so many connections. And that, so the fear resulted in action. So in my view, fear wasn't a negative emotion. If I wasn't scared, probably I wouldn't have acted.
Mm-hmm. It was a motivator.
So, yeah. So, I mean, that's my experience, at least. I can go on about multiple experiences. Even now, when AI came, my first reaction was, how can I be relevant in AI era? I'm not an AI native. I can never be an AI native. How can I be relevant? And, you know, Cognizant treats all people fantastically. I wanted to join this company. I made a choice to join this company 6.5 years ago. And so, in a way, I was also feeling, if I'm not relevant, will I be doing justice to the role that has been given to me? So it happened. And I took certain actions, and time would tell whether those actions make me effective in AI era. It is, you know, last 18 months we have seen this change, or 24 months. There was fear in me. There is still fear in me, and I'm not. I'm quite open about it with my team, with my customers, because customers also want to be co-opted. They want a service partner to co-opt them in the future that we have to build together. So the new world will be ecosystems, intense collaboration, co-opting each other to handle the ambiguity and to succeed together.
Well, this is a good shift into talking about AI in practice. You know, we've talked about AI and people as collaborators, but let's talk about how that collaboration plays out inside organizations as AI moves beyond, you know, tools that individuals are using into more agentic and workflow-driven systems. And, you know, I think we know that most of our clients at this point have at least experimented with AI. They've got lots of proofs of concept and use cases, but, you know, fewer are scaling it successfully. In your experience, what breaks? Why, you know, can you share a failure story and, you know, what the fix is?
See, we have started a service called AI Readiness Service, because before we start layering AI to assess whether the basic foundation exists for AI models to be done, which our primary focus is on process side and the data associated with process. Why are we doing that? Because an AI model which sits on top of a poorly architected foundation will generate very poor returns. And hence, the attempt is to do a CT scan of the foundation and work with the client to improve the foundation and then layer it with AI models, agentic AI, and so on. Obviously, this won't be a kind of a 3-year journey. And let me talk about the success. You asked me to talk about the failure. Let me talk about the success. All of us have experience calling into a contact center and talking to an agent. I mean, a customer of ours was the source of motivation for us. We were doing this for them for a few years. So together together with the customer, we visualized, can we have a continuum where we have an AI agent speaking to the caller, followed by a human agent if AI agent is not able to resolve? Mm-hmm. And for that, it required model to be trained on the domain area. And our training showed us multiple gaps. Gap number one, the latency. You ask a question, the system is processing. So as a customer who is calling in, you see this lag. Then second thing is, the response was very, if I may, metally. It wasn't human voice. So all those things were worked on. Today, it is in production. And we are expanding it to other industries and other customers. It's a brilliant use of technology. It's a super brilliant use of technology. Because, you know, these agents will work 24 hours a day. New thing is introduced, instantly trained. Everybody is operating at the same level of efficiency. And the specialization or super specialization is left to humans, and the AI agent will bounce anything which they can't answer to the to human agent. So this whole thing, humans and digital worker, or you used the term, they are working seamlessly. So this is possible today. Will it improve? Of course it will improve. You know, there are people who want it to be perfect and say, only when it is completely arrived. Never it will completely arrive. It will keep improving. And I think now is the time for anybody to enter.
One of the things that we've been talking about at Cognizant, you know, over the last 6 months quite a bit is the power of context. You know, there's all sorts of context, human context, data, workflows, tribal or institutional knowledge that an enterprise creates, and sort of the power of AI to be much more customized and capable when you build that context layer into it. Can you talk a little bit about context and, you know, why it's so important and how humans and agents kind of, you know, play that role around identifying and using context together?
I think it is probably the most important innovation or the concept of context. And before that, you know, there were the tech utilities where regardless of your, you know, one shoe size was given to everybody. Doesn't matter whether that shoe size fits you or not. And you had to wear it, either they were too tight or too loose, and some people probably got it perfect size. Whereas context gives you the ability to run AI the way that enterprise wants to run. You can reflect your strategy, your policies, even regulation as a regulatory aspect of the environment in which you are operating. So context is almost high volume personalization of the services which are being provided. So as a result, the confidentiality of your strategy, your policy, all can be encapsulated in the context engine which you are going to build.
Reflect that a little bit, you know, when you start to talk about AI that's tied to physical operations. You know, I think that we at Cognizant, we work across such a broad range of domains and industries, but in places like manufacturing or logistics or healthcare, where do, you know, how do industry regulations or safety considerations change the way we think about our implementation playbook, change the way that we think about the human and the AI sort of interplay? What's different in some of those physical instances of AI?
Take an example of health insurance claims. Mm-hmm. How do you process the claims? And who processes the claim? You have claims officer or claims adjudicator, whatever you want to call them. They are overburdened. Customer responsiveness as a result suffers. And when an organization, when the insurance company changes certain policies, they have to be retrained and all that. So we actually worked with some of these companies to embed agentic AI into claims. And what that does is it actually trains on the SOP that has been created. It learns from the past approvals or disapprovals given for claims. And it, instead of making the decision, it recommends the decision to the adjudicator. Mm. So adjudicator still has a final say, but you know, it's processing continuously and it will provide the logic, and adjudicators can say, oh, I accept this recommendation or reject that recommendation. So the exposure to the organization is less, and goes back to your earlier question, can you switch to autonomous operations immediately? We wouldn't recommend one switches to autonomous operations immediately in claims.
Right.
But this is the case.
What's different? What's fundamentally different today? You've shared so many different examples and, you know, things that you're seeing happening out there across a really broad range of types of businesses and clients. And you've also talked about designing, you know, an enterprise operating system, because essentially when you talk about those stacks that someone needs in the AI era, it's really an operating system that can kind of flow with things as they evolve over time. But I'm curious, what feels sort of fundamentally different about that now than 3 or 4 years ago, 6.5 years ago when you came to Cognizant? How's that changed?
If you look at agentic AI, it's probably the biggest, combined with context engine, is a huge, huge change, positive change for the industry, because enterprises can encapsulate their strategy, their policies through the context engine. Agentic AI can, which has both if I may, deterministic as well as probabilistic mm-hmm. workflow, leveraging the data. And I think predominantly enterprises will use deterministic at this point of time. Very few times they will go into probabilistic workflow because of reasons of change, auditability, governance, and control. But these can be built pretty quickly. And that's the advantage that, and last but not least, an intelligent mix of human and agentic AI workforce will result in greater satisfaction of their customers, better service, faster service, and lower cost. So it enhances competitiveness. It enhances your brand value because the quality of service that you are going to deliver would be of superior quality. So you know, I, having been in the industry for 40 years, when I came in, there were only green screens. There was no PC. Forget about laptops.
And you still don't have a laptop.
I have, but I don't use it. I love using my tablet or iPad. So from there, at every stage, I saw how enterprises and consumers absolutely lapped up the technology and changed the way they work. AI is a bigger intervention, and I'm very certain that both consumers have, I use it very regularly, Gen AI, on my phone, on my tablet. And I look for things which I couldn't do earlier. So if consumers are doing it, business enterprises will move next, and we will see a whole new world emerging. And if you look at the younger generation, the current generation, they are truly very responsible. They want to make the world a better place. Very balanced. So I'm quite bullish about what this is going to bring to the world.
I want to talk about that for a second, because you are bullish and you sit in a place where you are connected to the technology and you have a real strong perspective on the positives that it can engender for enterprises and for people. And I'm wondering, when you're out talking to our clients, do they share that bullishness at this point, or are you still seeing more hesitancy, more fear, more concern, uncertainty? Where is the rest of the world who maybe isn't as savvy as you are with the power of this technology?
I mean, my savviness is derived based on a few elements. One is how Cognizant has really risen to the occasion and gone ahead and did many things. So one is my employer. Second is my team, where they are very enthused about the art of possible. They have overcome their own fear. And third, most important one, which I don't want to, my interaction with customers. Believe me, I see the whole spectrum of customers. Some customers want to wait and watch because they are completely unsure. Some customers want to embrace, but they are unsure. Some customers are fairly advanced and they want to challenge the service providers to rise to the occasion. So I see a spectrum of customers, and that, if you believe that I'm savvy, I give credit to these three areas. And regardless of whether one wants it or doesn't want it, the train has left the station.
Yeah.
And all of us, individually or enterprises, have a choice. Do we want to be a victim or a victor? And that's the choice. I mean, standing still is probably not an option for me as a professional, individually.
So that's a good shift into our last segment. Let's talk a little bit about the future. AI is going to continue to accelerate. And as that happens, the challenge for leaders and for workers isn't choosing between speed and responsibility. It's really learning how to do both. And, you know, you said something a couple weeks ago when we met about unsettled being the new settled. How do you balance that? How do leaders help their, you know, clients, you know, understand that without breaking trust? How do they help their teams navigate that? And what behaviors do all of us have to embrace in order to thrive in a world where, you know, being unsettled may be reality?
I think ability to handle ambiguity is a key attribute leaders should have. Because if everything is in place, and all you need to do make a decision, your Excel spreadsheet can do that. Why do we need people? When it is ambiguous, that's when one has to make the call. And it is distinctly possible that some of the calls one makes results in failure. So the second ability is the ability to get up and run again is equally important. I love the definition of being successful. It says the you know, to succeed, you have to fail less. It
doesn't or fail say better. I've heard fail better.
Yeah, no, but you know, but whichever definition you use, it's not saying don't fail. Right. Because if you are not pushing hard enough, if you're not pushing the boundaries of success, probably you won't fail. Then you're not pushing the boundaries of success. So the beauty is one is going to play a different sport every day. And the rate of innovation is coming in at a breakneck speed. Any leader needs to have the ability to simplify things for their team members. And at the same time, have the ability to handle ambiguity and take people along in this journey, because I start with myself. I don't have all the knowledge that will make me successful in the future. So I count on new members that have joined who are probably AI native, existing members who may be super specialized, and together we conquer the world. And at the same time, as I mentioned earlier, if we make a mistake, we'll fall, we'll get up and run again.
What you just talked about there made me kind of think about the fact that the effective way to support people in this era isn't just about giving them technical skills, right? I mean, obviously, to be able to effectively handle ambiguity and continue to thrive even after you failed and to have a mindset where you keep trying and iterating and learning, that requires some other skills than just pure technical skills. So what does effective investment in people look like in this day and age? You know, if you had a dollar a week to spend on everybody on your team, where would it go? What would your focus be?
I mean, firstly, we have launched a program to train the entire workforce are on the basics of AI. So currently 93,000 people are there in IOA, and roughly about 60,000 have been trained. So giving them in some ways power of knowledge. Second, building a career architecture. We spoke about career GPS.
Yep.
So that they have the ability to see the future, visualize the future, and plot their steps towards the future. And third, it's not about pontificating as to what is going to happen. I have to demonstrate that I am embracing those things as the leader with genuine intent to make all 93,000 people successful in this new world. Some will choose not to participate in the new world. That's a choice which they make. Right. But I approach it with that it is my responsibility and accountability to take the entire team along in this journey. And you know, Cognizant is known to be a magical company. So we want the magic to be alive in the AI era. So
we talked a lot about, I think, people who are in the workforce, people who are at a company like Cognizant. And you also mentioned the younger generation, you know, a few minutes ago. You know, I have a son who's a sophomore in college, and he is an AI native, but he's also very anxious and afraid about what kind of job opportunities are going to be available to him when he graduates in 2 years. As I think many in that generation are, they're constantly reading about layoffs and the fact that a lot of entry-level jobs are disappearing. What advice, would you give to, my son and his, his cohort, the class of 2028 or the class of 2030? What's your advice?
You know, I'm saying the in some ways, society is training them to handle the ambiguity, because multiple factors, positive and negatives, coexisting, and they are not in normal range. They are operating in abnormal range. And so it is extremely taxing for people. But this is the environment which is preparing them for handling ambiguity. Mm-hmm. To that extent, you know, when I finished my degree, I didn't have the level of ambiguity that the current generation has. And the only advice I would leave for, this is for me and for others, including the younger generation, which is going to graduate, network is everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So learning the ability to network and retaining and nurturing connections is extremely important. So even if you look at the good schools, it's not just the education in that school. That's it's right. Not just the quality of students in that school. It's the alumni network. And if it is very strong, what it does, it builds a kind of a flywheel effect where the school gets rated better and better because the network is able to absorb the output from those educational institutions. So during internship. So it's not just about how you perform. It's also about how you build your personal brand and how you network will help you in a long distance. And I can't imagine myself facing that at that young age. But world will present unique set of opportunities, new set of opportunities. Don't allow the uncertainty to rule your mind, because in many ways, the new world is actually being created by these youngsters. I believe it is very tough, and these people will come out to be better leaders than many of us, simply because they are already being trained in handling ambiguity.
Yeah. That's a great, I love so many of the things that you just said there, because it's about, you know, networking, which is sort of a fundamentally human way of engaging in the world. And I also like what you said too about, you know, this is a generation that's dealt with COVID and they've dealt with, you know, all these very challenging things in a shorter time span than our generation did, that I think is teaching them to fail faster, to fail better, to be iterative, to know that they can continue to thrive through change. So I think that's a great lesson. My last question, though, is about you, Ganesh. What's on your career GPS? What are you going to try to learn or do or change in the next 30, 60, 90 days? What's next for you to continue to thrive in ambiguity?
Yeah, right from young age, a puzzle which is more difficult to solve has gotten my attention. If the problem is more difficult, it excites me. And genuinely, one of the key reasons why I joined Cognizant, when I was CEO of another company, obviously Cognizant was a competitor, but I used to have very healthy respect for competitors. And I had special respect for Cognizant of how they created the strategy and created a bellwether company for the industry. So when I was thinking about joining, Cognizant became top in my list. And my, as an EC member, president of these two units, joining hands with rest of my EC and our CEO, we are working towards bringing the old magic back, which is contextually in the AI world, contextually relevant. Context is an important word. Mm-hmm. And I want to be an active partner in this journey with the rest of the EC, rest of Cognizant, and with the CEO to bring the magic back.
What we've heard today is that empowering people in the AI era isn't about slowing down technology. It's also not about replacing people. It's about designing work systems and operating models where human judgment, human adaptability, and context remain central. And Ganesh, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate the unique and very optimistic and exciting perspective you have on where we are today and where we're heading. So thank you.
Thank you, Pam. And I wouldn't have guessed that you have a son who is a sophomore.
I do indeed.
Absolute delight to meet you. And let's keep in touch.
Well, thanks to all of you for listening. We'll be back soon with more on how Cognizant is helping organizations turn emerging technologies into meaningful progress. We'll see you next time on Stay Cognizant.